Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
When we first met, the stars stayed in the sky. And our first kiss, the fireworks, waited till the 4th of July. No music in the air, her church bells anywhere. No poetry or song, we're still going strong. Our love is not a crazy love, not a lazy love, buttercup and daisy love, not as. Our love is not a famous love, but dangerous love, not to lonely people who are strangers' love. It's nothing rare, but we don't care or tire of.
All right, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. Most people would agree that there's nothing stronger than the bond between two brothers. And when that bond includes the common goal of making music, the results are often more reason for an audience to sit up and take notice. Like the Everly Brothers to Oasis and from the Beach Boys to the Kinks, audiences have embraced the brother band, the Bacon Brothers. The new album is called The Way We Love, and actor and musician Kevin Bacon and film composer and musician Michael Bacon join us once again tonight. You guys have been working together on stage for nearly 25 years, and as brothers, you guys haven't killed each other yet.
We have not killed each other. We are still alive and kicking. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the Everlys and you mentioned Oasis and bands, you know, battling brother bands. And I'm sorry to say that we just don't fit into that category.
That's awesome. Michael, you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 9 years older, and I think a lot of that kind of interpersonal behavior starts at a very young age with particularly boys that are very close in age, and they start wrestling and punching. And for me, I was brought up with four sisters, so the wrestling and punching wasn't so good. And by the time my brother came around, he was 9 years younger, and it didn't quite seem like a fair fight.
Very good.
So never happened.
Good, good, good. Well, the chemistry on stage speaks for itself. I saw you guys at the Arcata Theater back in 2015 in St. Charles here, and I was blown away, you know. And I mean, fans know you, Kevin, for your film work, Michael, and composing. So when you see two guys out of their normal zone that you're familiar with, it's pretty cool, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, we know that people are going to come to the show and they've probably seen me in something. And we don't shy away from that. We just kind of embrace that and, you know, kind of have a good time with it. But at the same time, we're there to play music, and you get a chance to see two people, one that you know, you think you know, probably from movies and television and stuff, and, and the other that know to recognize. But it's just a fascinating kind of show to watch, just in terms of like two, we got the same parents, but we came out, you know, pretty different ways, and in some ways very similar. And you know, it's a great gift to be able to play music in front of people with your brother.
You guys grew up in Philly, and as you said, it wasn't just you two. You had four other sisters. Michael, was music always an element in your life, or when did you find interest in it?
Yeah, it really was, and I guess I was born with it. except that our parents loved music. Neither of them were real musicians. Our mother played the mandolin. Our father had not a musical bone in his body. But they loved music, and they had a rehabbed house in the middle of Philadelphia with a state-of-the-art sound system that you could hear all over the house. And all my memories of falling asleep are to folk music, world music, classical music, jazz, Broadway. So I don't remember a time where I wasn't completely fascinated with music, and particularly by the instruments. Mm-hmm. I remember when I got my first cello. I was probably 5 or 6 years old. I can remember it like it was yesterday. The lighting in the room, the smell of the lacquer, the cello, just everything about it. It was this sort of glowing foreign presence that had been landed into my life. And later on, when I started playing the folk instruments, I was the same way. I would go by all the pawn shops and see what instrument were hanging in the window, and just completely fascinated by it. And at the same time, though, in those days, and these are quite a long time ago, an option really was not on the table to just quit school and become a musician. Mm-hmm. And I never thought that would be an option. And then I did go off to college, and then a very old friend of mine who had more confidence than about five people and plenty to get me going said, look, quit college. I'm still performing a band. You're going to be the lead singer. And boom, that's what I did. And I'm very lucky that I jumped off this road that really was not going to, lead me to any happiness. And music's the only thing I know how to do. And I'm really lucky that people pay me enough money to live and my family to get by. And so I'm a very lucky man.
I want to ask you, Michael, like, were there any influences, any artists that you said, I want to be like that guy? Like, that's cool.
Well, the first one was Pete Seeger. Mm. He was a banjo player, and he had a special kind of banjo made, which was a five-string banjo, but it had an extended neck, so he kind of used it as a conductor's baton as well. And he was a wonderful songwriter and wonderful singer and performer, and he was a really, really heavy influence on me when I was a really little guy.
Kevin, what about you? When did music, obviously acting was a big part of, and is a big part of your life, but when did music kind of come in the fold?
Well, I grew up listening to my brother play. I grew up listening to my brother practice and write songs. And then I also have, we have four sisters too. So they're all a lot older than me, and they were bringing home records and playing music and rock and roll and soul music and folk music, and so I think it started with my siblings, and growing up in Philly, we just had a lot of access to music. It just seemed like, there were bands in school. We had places we'd hang out after school, and kids would get together and put a band together, and we'd play, and it always seemed to be there. Our parents weren't musicians, but for some reason it was around.
Who were some of your influences, Kevin?
Well, I guess, my brother, first off.
That's
and
cool.
Then listening to the Beatles and the Stones and the Big Brother and the Holding Company and all the Motown stuff and the Philly sound, the TSOP. And I just kept absorbing it whenever I could. I was around when AM radio turned FM radio and acid rock kind of came in.
Sure.
And then my kids, kept me moving forward in terms of like the music, because they were listening to stuff as they were growing up in the 90s. And I loved the rock of the 90s. I thought, the whole grunge movement was just fantastic stuff. I still listen to a lot of that stuff. So it's, punk. My son got really into punk, and I was kind of peripherally into punk, and then I just kind of rediscovered it, and, on and on and on.
Yeah, that's cool. Two completely different influences, and then you guys came together to bring some music to stage, so that's pretty cool. We're talking to the Bacon Brothers, Kevin Bacon and Michael Bacon, on the new album, The Way We Love. And there's more after this on 720 WGN.
Thank you.
cold beers in the sun. No, not in this one. No country roads or lonesome southbound trains. No sad goodbyes or standing in the rain. I won't place anything above you, just so I can rhyme I love you. I've got no words for why we're all alone. This is bigger than a song.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to the Bacon Brothers, Kevin and Michael, on their new album, The Way We Love. So you guys grew up with influences in live theater. Do you have some favorite stage productions that were something that you really enjoyed watching and being entertained by, Michael?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind are Broadway shows. In a funny way, I think that's one of the differences in Kevin and I, is I was really raised on Broadway shows and still love it as a genre. And by the time Kevin came along, I think my parents were sort of just past that, and they just didn't spend a lot of time sitting down and listening to things like that. And there was a lot more influence, a lot more access to, you know, through iPods and stuff like that, where you didn't really have to rely on people. So I think my brother's experience was very different. I think my upbringing was amazingly eclectic. And for instance, you know, I'm a college professor teaching film scoring, and I was listening to the end of West Side Story, and there's one of the things that I teach are the devices that film composers use to make the music disappear. And one of them is called a pedal tone. And if you listen to the very, very end of West Side Story, there's one pedal tone. It probably lasts 4 minutes, and it never changes. And you are aware of Bernstein's genius and the fact that if you took the pedal tone out, pedal tone is just a note that does not change.
Yep.
A lot of things change around it, but it's like a spine or a backbone. And without that, the end of West Side Story would sound like fluff. But with the addition of that held note, it gives it a grounding, and also a sense that, yeah, it's a happy ending, sort of, but man, it's not really a happy ending. Enjoy this for the time that it is, but there's plenty more to come. And certainly he was right.
But with music in your blood, you notice that just watching the play about those tones you were just talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, West Side Story, is that the best ever?
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, probably.
Of course, I'm curious to know what note it is and whether or not Bernstein picked that note specifically.
Interesting. Interesting. Michael, do you know?
You know, sure. What the pedal tone allows the composer to do is do kind of whatever they want, as long as they keep the pedal tone in there, mm-hmm. and it makes the music disappear. And it's a really critical device to film scoring, because as a film composer, most of the time you're trying to make the music, you're trying to go into the psychology of whatever the film is, and you can't have psychology and music blaring that attracts attention to itself. You have to figure out ways to let the music sink into the picture. And, if you listen to, let's say, Shawshank Redemption, the final cue, there's a pedal tone that lasts about 6 minutes as the character goes and looks for on the stone wall. And this, but I was actually teaching that today. And
were you?
There's an A that plays through the whole thing for about 6 minutes.
Wow.
And Thomas Newman's score, yeah.
Wow, and I mean, I'm assuming also kind of exploring and experimenting with the instruments is a part of this experience for you guys too. So, Kevin, are there other instruments that you're not as familiar with that you'd like to get into or have been experimenting with or playing on and off the stage?
I'm not much of a player of anything, but I really, really, really adore instruments. If I get a chance to play them or use them, whether they're some kind of percussion or, whatever it is, I just love doing it. I just got a gift of something called a strum stick, which is, real real inexpensive little thing with three notes, but it's like an open tuning thing, and it's just got a cool thing. It reminds me a lot of my brother has a cigar box guitar, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
I love that. Is it kind of like a dulcimer?
It's like a dulcimer, yeah, but with only three strings.
Wow.
That's all a dulcimer has.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Dulcimer has three strings? I didn't realize.
Does it have a body that resonates, or is it just the stick?
It's got a small body, almost like a mini balalaika.
Oh, that's great. I want one.
Yeah, and I'll get you one. I'll definitely get you one.
Well, that's cool. But it's small. It's like you said, like a cigar box. I mean, we're talking about a really small base to this thing.
Yeah.
It's very small, but it's got a pretty long neck, and I think they have different sizes. I think mine is is what they call a D, and I think they make a G, and it's a great little thing, because it's like it's the type of thing that if you don't play an instrument, it's a great way to start, because if you just put your finger on one fret and slide it up, you're playing something kind of nice.
You know
what I mean? It's not, you're doing something, man.
Yeah.
There aren't really any wrong notes on a dulcimer.
There's no wrong notes, right?
Gotcha.
And I mean, I always think of Joni Mitchell, but with that super simple instrument, what she was able to do with that, it was so masterful.
We're talking to the Bacon brothers, Kevin Bacon and Michael Bacon, on the new album, The Way We Love. And there's more after this on 720 WGN.
I pick her up outside the gate, she takes the wheel. I DJ and navigate, she tells me everything she feels, and we can take it slow. 55. One more time around the block. Cause I like to watch her, I won't wake her up, I'll stay in bed. I wonder if that world that seems to roll around her head, is she in another land? Counting sheep, oh, quiet as I can. Cause I like to watch her. She's easy, she's easy, she's easy, she's easy, easy on my eyes. She's easy, she's easy, she's easy, she's easy, easy on my eyes. I'm watching her on Friday night, she does her hair. She's standing in the closet light and trying to find something to wear. I'm pulling out some options, which one's best? Now she's slipping into something, and I like to watch her. She's easy, she's easy, she's easy, she's easy, easy on my eyes. She's easy, she's easy, she's easy, she's easy, easy on my eyes. So I thank heaven, heaven is a favor. Your table. So I believe when we're gone. Now take comfort, he can't see what's going on. She used to love my jokes, even when they weren't that funny. She used to love the sunset and the lake. And she used to say straight up, boy, don't you do it for the money. There's nothing you can buy as good as what you make. She would have loved a girl after her, and is warm, but she is wise. She loved her more, but she also loved the truth. And I don't think she could take these endless lies. And I thank heaven, but heaven is a fable.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to the Bacon Brothers, Kevin and Michael, on the new album, The Way We Love. Who does the writing? Like, who do you guys write together? Do you pull the songs together? Do you, you know, does one do the music, one do the lyrics? Or you, like, how does that work with you guys?
Well, a lot of people think that because Kevin's not a trained musician that he writes the lyrics and I write the music, which is definitely not the case.
Mm-hmm.
When we first started out, Kevin really didn't start playing any instruments very seriously until we put the band together when he started, you know, playing guitar, you know, live. So Kevin would sing me melodies and lyrics that he had written, and I would, you know, put the chords around it and help him arrange it. And I also had a recording studio. We did some recording. And as the band progressed, Kevin's skills in terms of arranging and being able to play the guitar and also the keyboards and the drums and the bass and all that kind of stuff developed so that he didn't really need me to help him. So we pretty much write separately, both writing all our own lyrics, music, and arrangements. And then occasionally we do some collaboration, but not so much. It's usually in kind of some kind of a special case.
Gotcha. And now, of course, the new album, The Way We Love. Kevin, why don't you start? Tell me a little bit about the new album.
Well, you know, I really didn't think that we would ever do another album.
How come?
You know, I always think, well, just because it's our ninth album, and, you know, just, I always think to myself, well, we're not going to write it. Songs are not going to write any more songs. You know what I mean? I always think every time I write a song, I go, "That's it. That's the last one." And you know, you got to have enough new stuff to put a record together. So we were kind of in this process of putting out singles, and we had put out about four singles.
So you're on your way.
And then you know, yeah, Mike wrote a couple more, and I wrote a couple more, and we put a live track on there, and. And it sounds very piecemeal in a way, but the truth is that the album feels pretty cohesive to me, actually. And I feel really good about the writing. And we're a songwriting band. That's our whole sink or swim is, you know, how are the songs? Are the songs working? And I feel like the writing has grown and gotten better and you know, mature because we're mature.
Sure.
And, or at least we're pretending to be mature. Or, well, let's put it this way. We should be mature. At this
we're old
point.
Enough to be mature.
Right. To be.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you. I feel very proud of this one. I think it's got some really good stuff on it. We cut a couple of songs, probably three songs, not with our usual band. We adore our band. They're fantastic players, and they did great work on this. And just for, coincidentally, we had a couple of tunes that we did work with some other musicians and other producers, and that gave those kind of a different vibe, but it's cool. I like it.
Michael, what about you? What do you like about this new album?
I think that it wasn't really ever, you know, planned. I think the records we had before, we were more focused into, you know, a CD and what that CD would be, and that would be a milestone in the band. And I think in this case, we were sort of doing singles. And, you know, you do four or five singles, and you're thinking, well, we don't have an album here. I mean, a CD here. And, you know, we sort of just let it spontaneously flow out until we had enough songs. And then our management said, okay, let's master it and sequence it and get it out. So I think there was a lot less kind of planning, which makes it sort of more fun. And the other thing that was really nice about this record, you know, because of all the misery of the world since March, I think our last recording session, I think that was the first time where I remember that people were starting to social distance and wear masks and stuff like that. So when we got together with the guys, there wasn't really any kind of protocol in place yet. So the lucky part for us was that while all of our gigs were canceled and most of our live performances during the summer months, spring and summer, were canceled, we had something to work on and something to focus on. And that, I think, is one of the reasons that we've gotten so many really great videos out of this and more to come, just because we just had more time. And normally in the summer, we were out on a tour bus.
Very cool. Yeah, right. You have more time to do some of these things you probably will never have time to do again.
Yeah, absolutely. And, with Kevin doing videos and Kira's there and having two professional filmmakers certainly
certainly helps,
quality,
right?
Of the, product.
Yeah. Speaking of which, before I let you guys go, right now during all this, the simplest things are getting attention. And I caught on Instagram, I don't know, about a few days ago, a week ago, about your morning mango, Kevin.
God, that thing just blew up, you know. I can't really explain it. I don't understand. It's like I've posted a lot of stuff in my life, but that one, I don't know. I'm not sure why, but that just blew up.
Well, not waking up your wife, doing it quietly, showing your morning ritual. I mean, as I said, the simplest things right now are getting our attention.
That's how I eat a mango. That's all I can say. I'm glad I shared it with the world.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Well, the new album, again, is called The Way We Love. And for more, you can visit thebaconbrothers.com. That's B-R-O-S, baconbrothers.com. Kevin, Michael, always a pleasure chatting with you, and I hope there's another album on the horizon.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, we appreciate your help with the CD. It means a lot.